Okay, new recording. So we have as follows. This is chapter 6 of Pirkei Avos. Chapter 6 of Pirkei Avos actually is not part of Pirkei Avos. It is a separate work written by the same group of sages called the Tanaim, but it is a separate work. Pirkei Avos itself has 5 chapters, and the reason that this chapter is added to it is because it is always learned on the Shabbos before Shavuos. And it's really a section of Braisa, which is also written by the authors of the Mishnah, but not part of the Mishnah itself. It was not included in the anthology of the Mishnah, in the canon, so to speak, in the collection of Mishnah. However, it's written by the same sages, and it is called Kinyan Torah. Kinyan Torah is the name of this chapter. Kinyan is a Hebrew word that means to acquire, to buy something, to acquire something. So therefore, what this chapter teaches us is, how does one go about acquiring Torah? And it also talks about what is the benefits of acquiring Torah. The Rebbe makes a comment, and the Rebbe's comment is that when you say Kinyan Torah, the acquiring of Torah, it implies a number of things. First of all, it implies that you have the ability to own Torah. You have the ability to own Torah. And this is actually a pasuk, a verse in Tehillim, where it says, David HaMelech says right in the beginning of Tehillim, Ubetoraso yehege yom v'layla, the person will study Torah in his own Torah. You'll study Torah day and night. And this again means a number of things at the same time. Number one, it means that every person has a part in Torah that belongs uniquely to them. Fascinating concept. Every person has a part in Torah that belongs specifically to them, and it's their job to study that part of Torah, to teach that part of Torah, to live that part of Torah. As a matter of fact, we are all called Yisrael. Of course, the children of Israel. And Yisrael, according to our Chachamim, our sages, is an acronym for the following words, Yesh. It's Yud, Shin, Resh, Aleph, Lamed, 5 letters, acronym for 5 words, Yesh. There are Shishim, Ribo, 600,000 Otiot, La Torah, letters in the Torah, which means that there are 600,000 root neshamas, root souls. All the souls come out of these 600,000 root souls. So too, there are 600,000 letters in the Torah, even though there are not 600,000 letters in the Torah Shabbat. Chsav, in the Torah scroll, is only 304,803 letters in the Torah, about 305,000 letters in the Torah. But there are also letters in the Torah that are implied letters, that are not actually written letters. So sometimes there is a E sound, which would be a Yud, or a U sound, which could be a Vav, or an Aleph sound, which could be an Aleph, but it doesn't say the Aleph. So there are implied, together, the written letters, the implied letters, is about 600,000 letters. And there are, therefore, these are energy points. So the Torah essentially is a basket of energy that Hashem gives to the world, and each neshama has a certain connection to one of those energy points, and therefore each neshama has the ability to attach themselves to that concept, to that idea, and the obligation to actually develop that idea, develop that concept. Everybody is unique in that regard. So that's number one. What does it mean that Torah is our Torah, that we have the ability to own it? You own the Torah because you have the obligation to study, and to study in such a way that you uncover new and novel insights in Torah. The second thing, the point that Rebbe makes, is that Kinyan Torah means that you own the Torah the way Hashem has the Torah, and not the way you want to. You don't remake the Torah. Hashem, the way the Torah comes down to this world is supposed to be the same way that Hashem gives us the Torah. You're not supposed to tamper with the Torah. You're supposed to expand the concepts, teach the concepts, spread the concepts, but not change the concepts themselves. So that's the concept of Kinyan Torah. The Gemara tells us that Hashem created the Torah 2,000 years before Hashem created the world. And of course, in Chassidic philosophy explains that 2,000 years, what does this mean? How could it be that Torah was created before the world? The world is created with time. There was no time before the world. There were no time itself is part of the creation. In other words, something that's not physical doesn't have time. And therefore, Chassidus says this is simply a poetic way of saying that the level of Chachma and the level of Bina, the first two of the 10 Sefirot, which is essentially what Torah is, Hashem's Chachma and Hashem's Bina, is what Torah is all about. So Torah has a certain quality, and the quality is, as we're going to see from the chapter, the quality is that not only does Torah form the basis for the world, the architectural documents for the world, the energy template for the flow of the template for the flow of energy into the world, and in fact into each of our neshamas, but also the Torah remains untouched and unchanged by the world itself. So therefore, Torah is Hashem's energy that is used as the basis for creation. The Torah is, therefore, the energy that determines how the world is supposed to act. So very famously, Gemara says that if a person reaches a certain age, there are bodily changes. There are changes to your body when you get older. Let's say the court, the Beit Din, decided that that year should be a leap year. Because after all, the Beis Din, the High Court in Yerushalayim, the main Beis Din, the Sanhedrin, had one of their jobs was they had to decide which month is a month. Today is Rosh Chodesh, right? Last month was only 29 days, but that's the way it is today. In the times of the Beis HaMikdash, it could have been that the last month was 30 days. Who decides that? The Sanhedrin decides that in Yerushalayim. And then who decides this year is a leap year, that we have 13 months in the Jewish year? Who decides that? The Sanhedrin. So all of our years today are decided, and all of our Rosh Chodesh is decided because there was a Sanhedrin that set that up for all the future years. There are 14 model years, and they set up the whole system. But that was also set up by the Sanhedrin. But that was set up as an ongoing project. In ancient times, this was decided on a month-by-month basis and a year-by-year basis. So if the question becomes, if there are certain changes that happen to the human body when you reach a certain age, if the court decides that this year is a leap year and now there are 13 months to the year, did that change happen or not? Very interesting question. We believe that that change doesn't happen. Even though if it wouldn't be a leap year, the change would happen. The individual would become more mature. But since the court decided that it's a leap year, change doesn't happen for another month. That's the halacha. Halacha determines reality. Torah determines reality. Reality does not affect Torah. There is no such thing, therefore, as reality outside of the Torah's perception of what is and what should be. This is, of course, as modern science, we understand this a little bit. We don't really understand it, but even modern science believes that the reality of the world is depending on the observer. There is no such thing as an independent reality of the world. This is, quantum mechanics is one of the fundamental concepts that there is, that you can predict probability of something happening, but actuality, if you want to know actually what is, that you can't do anything about until it actually is observed by an observer. So even modern science says this concept. And that is what the Torah is all about. So we believe as Jews that the Torah not only is a set of wisdom that Hashem gives to us to live in the world, It's actually the energy that forms the patterns for the world itself. And it's actually the energy that determines what the world is going to be. The great tzaddikim are able to do miracles in the world, not because they are, hold on just one second. Sorry about that. Hello. Okay, I'm on a Zoom call right now. Okay. Okay. My boss is calling. Got to answer. So anyway, that's what happens. So the Torah therefore becomes the patterns for the creation of the world. The Torah becomes the way the world, the physical reality actually presents itself is through Torah, and the tzaddikim, therefore, were able to do miracles, not because they're some kind of magicians, but because they have access to the energy flow. They change if I hold up my hands and in front of a light source and I make a picture of a bunny rabbit like the kids used to do, so am I making a bunny rabbit? I'm blocking the light from going a certain place, and so it looks like a bunny rabbit. So this is what happens. So if you can control the light flow, then you can control what happens in the effect of that light flow. And the tzaddikim were able to do that. Some tzaddikim were able to only know what's happening. So for example, there are amazing stories about tzaddikim who were able to open up the book of Tehillim on Shabbos morning, and they read in the book of Tehillim itself, they were able to know what's happening in the whole world. How can you know what's happening by reading the book of Tehillim? You're sitting in your room, you're sitting in your house, in a little shtetl somewhere, and you know what's happening in the whole world. But these tzaddikim did, because the Torah is in they were able to look inside the Torah. They were able to understand what's happening. How it works, I can't tell you. But that's how the tzaddikim were able to do it. So let's see what it says a little bit here. So Rav Meir says, whoever studies Torah for Torah's sake alone, and this is called lishma. Lishma, in the Hebrew word for the sake of Torah, you merit many things. And now the question is, and this is something that all the commentaries talk about and all the Gemara talks about, that you're supposed to study Torah lishma. You're supposed to study Torah not for any side purpose, not for any additional benefit, but for the sake of the Torah itself. What does this really mean? To study Torah for the sake of Torah. How do you study Torah for the sake of Torah? Torah needs you to study it. So this actually implies what I was saying earlier, that the Torah itself wants the Jew to study Torah in order to have that concept expounded and expanded and taught. So that therefore, the initial concept or the baseline concept of studying Torah for Torah's sake is that Torah wants us, the Jewish nation, to study it. So what we benefit from the study of Torah, by Torah giving us information, Torah giving us direction, instruction, comfort, everything Torah gives us, the Torah benefits conversely also at the same time. And the reason is because according to the Zohar, there are three circles that are interconnected: Hashem, the Creator, the Torah, and the Neshamas of the Jewish people. So that what is the Torah? That's really what we're grappling with in this chapter. That's really what we are explaining and defining in this chapter. What is Torah? What in fact is Torah? Is Torah a set of knowledge? Is it a set of instructions? Like, is it a law book that you have to follow? And if not, you're not making Hashem happy. What is Torah? So on a low level, Torah is a law book. It tells you how to act, how to do what to do on Shabbos, what to do in the weekday, what to do in the holidays, what to do in the Beis HaMikdash, et cetera, et cetera. But that's only as a mechanism, as a means for the higher purpose of Torah. And what is the higher purpose of Torah? The higher purpose of Torah is connection with Hashem. So ultimately, what is Torah? The Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya, we've studied this. The Alter Rebbe says that what is Torah? Torah is Hashem's wisdom, Hashem's way of thinking, Hashem's way of understanding, Hashem's way of thinking, Hashem's way of approaching concepts and things. So what is Torah at the end of the day? Torah is the closest that a human being can approach to their creator. Because the closest you could be with another person is not a physical closeness. You could be physically close to somebody. You could be face to face with the person and about to punch them in the nose. You could be back to back with the person in a big fight with them. Everybody understands that physical closeness, it doesn't really mean closeness. Emotional closeness, now you're getting a little closer. But emotional closeness is selfish. Emotional closeness is because I feel warm feelings from being close to this person. Therefore, I am emotionally close. Emotionally close is selfish. Even if the person is like a mother who is emotionally close and loves the child, you say not like a spouse and a spouse where you're, you know, you feel that they are filling some need of yours. So that's for sure selfish. Again, it's not bad selfish, but it's selfish. It's self-serving at the end of the day. If you don't get that feeling of emotional closeness and emotional fulfilling of your needs, you're not, you know, in this warm, loving relationship. It just doesn't happen. So now you're in a bad relationship, actually. So that for sure, even though that's the way marriage is supposed to be, let's say, or friendship is supposed to be. But again, it's self-serving. So that can't be the highest level. So let's talk, ramp it up a notch and talk about, let's say, the level of a parent-child relationship, which is a higher level. Your little infant is waking you up in the middle of the night. You know, your older child, you're expecting something in return already, some nachas, some something. But let's talk about even the moment you give birth to a little child who is actually the most annoying creature, wakes, cries all day long, has colic, let's say, you know, wakes you up in the middle of the night, but you love this creature. Why do you love this creature? So what are you getting in return? What you're getting in return is something you can't even define in words. So you know, that could be the ultimate on the emotional level. But still, what you're getting is, you're getting the sense that, wow, I'm going to live forever. Wow, this is a part of me that I've managed to create, a human being. Again, it's still self-serving because that's just the nature of emotion. And Chassidus puts a lot of explanation into this, that emotion, whether it's love for Hashem or fear for Hashem or love or fear of another human being, has to be self-serving, must be self-serving, unless we're talking about the highest level of love of that a tzaddik has for Hashem, which is called Ahava B'Tanugim. It's a separate love. We'll talk about that in the later chapters of Tanya. We've touched on it a little bit, but the later chapters of the first part of Tanya goes into much more detail. At any rate, we can definitely understand that having an intellectual closeness is selfless. An intellectual closeness is selfless. And that is the closest you can get to another human being, having the same thought processes, being on the same page mentally and intellectually. Wow, now you're really close. And of course, when it comes to Hashem, we understand that we use our relationships with humans as a template, as a way of understanding our relationship with our creator. And this is something that the Midrash says, that Hashem created us in his image. That means that the ways that we become close with each other is the ways that we become close with Hashem, and means also things at other levels too. So this
quick question, because that's something that Natasha actually on some points, and when she was at the Shabbat dinner with a rabbi in Florida, how does mitzvahs relate to that? Because is it enough to just learn Torah and then you're close to Hashem, or you have to do mitzvahs and then that's how you get close to Hashem? Like, how?
All right, so I'll talk in a moment about the difference between Torah and mitzvahs. Okay. Let me just finish this concept about Torah, then we'll go back and a little bit about what, if that's the case, why does Hashem give us mitzvahs? Why not just study Torah, right? So this is the idea of Torah. So first we have to define what is Torah, I was saying. So we're defining what is Torah. What is Torah? Torah is Hashem's chachma and bina, Hashem's way of understanding, thinking, in Hashem's intellectual processes. And the closest you could become, I would say, with another human being is being on intellectual parity, being intellectual closeness with them. And therefore, that's the same truth of being with Hashem. So the closest, therefore, that us human beings can be with our creator, Hashem, is by incorporating Hashem's wisdom into our wisdom, remaking our way of looking at the world into Hashem's way of looking at the world. So we study so much until that becomes our second nature, that becomes our go-to. What the Torah says has become so ingrained into our fiber of our, every fiber of our being, that that becomes who we are. We become Torah people. So now, is that the highest level? No, that's still not the highest level. Because if the reason that we're studying Torah is in order for us to become one with Hashem, we have this incredibly spiritual thirst, and the thirst is that we want to become close to our, then again, it's about us. It's a very high level. It's a wonderful thing. If this is how we actually can go through life, believe me, this is, you're like a tzaddik. You're like unbelievable. Not a complete tzaddik, because it's at a higher level. But it's an amazing thing. If the reason you're studying Torah is to read, but it's still not the highest level. And in this case, we're talking about the highest level in the beginning of this chapter. We're studying Torah for Torah's sake alone, not even for the sake of us becoming connected with Hashem on the highest levels, not even for the sake of us knowing what to do, the mitzvahs, knowing how to act. We're studying Torah only for Torah's sake. And what is Torah's sake? Torah's sake is because the Torah wants the energy from the Jewish neshama. The Torah wants, that this connection between these three circles, Hashem, the Jewish neshama, and the Torah wants that connection. Just like we want that connection to happen, Hashem wants that connection to happen, and the Torah wants that connection to happen. So therefore, when we study Torah for on this high level, the only reason that we're studying Torah is to connect our neshamas and whatever power we have to understand and to explain Torah. That is studying Torah lishma. That's the definition, according to the Hasidic explanation of studying Torah, without any ulterior motive. It's only for the sake of Torah. So this is for this you have to study the mystical teachings to understand how could Torah gain from the Jewish neshama. What is Torah? Seems like a dry package of knowledge. What is that knowledge going to gain? In other words, what does the book gain from the person who studies it? The answer is Torah is not a book. Torah is energy. Torah is Hashem's energy on a very high level. And that energy actually gains and finds a purpose. What does it mean, gains? So at the end of the day, this is the only way to understand it, is it finds a purpose when the Jewish neshama attaches itself to the Torah and studies the Torah. So therefore, ultimately, what is the source of everything? Hashem. Hashem is the source. God is the source of the Torah, the source of the Jewish nation, and so on and so forth. Hashem's plan is that these two energy pools that he created, the pool of energy that forms the basis for all of our neshamas, and the pool of energy that Hashem put his wisdom into. And again, according to Kabbalah, according to Chassidus, it was a step down from the essence of Hashem. The essence of Hashem cannot even be expressed in words of Torah. This is called tzimtzum, a step down, a contraction of Hashem's energy that he put into Torah. But it is a way of attaching ourselves to the essence of Hashem. Hashem can do anything. He was able to put himself, and how this works, it's not logical. Hashem was able to put his unlimited aspect into the limited aspects of Torah. So when we study Torah, our neshamas meet up. There's energy in our neshamas, in our souls, meet up with the energy in the Torah, and that becomes the closing of these three circles, the combining, the coming together. So that is what it means, studying Torah. Now, if a person does this, so everything is open to you. And if this is just plain logical, why is everything open? Because everything stems from that. So if you have the access to the source of the energy, do you have access to what the energy creates? Of course you do. You're sitting at the very beginning of the whole chain. You're sitting at the root of the tree. You're sitting at the beginning of the energy flow. You have access to everything. You're the central bank. You have access to everything that comes out from that. So then everything becomes a consequence. Not only you're called a friend, beloved, lover of God. Why is that? Because that's Hashem's plan. Hashem wants there should be unity between the Jewish neshamas and Torah. Rejoicer of God, you make Hashem happy. Rejoicer of humanity. The Torah makes you humble and makes you full of awe. How could Torah make you humble on that level? The answer is because what is humility? Humility means recognizing that there is something much greater than yourself. When a person studies Torah, not for the sake of Torah, but for the sake of acquiring knowledge, for the sake of knowing things, then that shuts you out from being humble. It actually makes you arrogant because you become full of knowledge. You become full of yourself. You become high on yourself. Look how much I know. And therefore, you become arrogant as a consequence. But if you're studying Torah for Torah's sake, in order to connect your neshamas to the essence of Hashem, that which is expressed in the language and the thought process of Torah, then essentially what you're really recognizing to the limits of the human ability to recognize is how awesome Hashem is. You're recognizing how awesome your own neshama powers are. And how great the Creator is, and how could you not be in a state of incredible humility in that case? Then you're recognizing how small you are and not how big you are. And the Torah gives the person all kinds of secrets and so on and so forth. I'm going to skip a little bit to one of the later Mishnahs, very famous Mishnah, Mishnah 9. Talk about this, we're getting a little bit late. Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma said, once I was traveling, I encountered a man. He greeted me, I returned his greetings. He said to me, Rabbi, where are you from? I said to him, I'm from a great city of sages and scholars. So he said to me, would you like to dwell with us in our place? I'll give you a million dinars, gold, precious stones, pearls. So I said to him, if you were to give me all the silver, gold, precious stones and pearls in the world, I would not dwell anywhere but in a place of Torah. As it says in Tehillim, I prefer the Torah of your mouth over thousands of gold and silver. And furthermore, it's only going to help me temporarily if you're going to give me gold and silver. I'm not going to live forever. When a person passes away, the gold, silver, precious stones don't accompany him. Only the Torah and the mitzvahs. As it says, where you go will direct you and so on and so forth. So therefore, it essentially seems from this Mishnah that he refused. That's what it would seem from this Mishnah. The Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma was traveling, and he meets a guy who says, please, Rabbi, help me, teach me Torah, and I'll even pay you. You're not going to have any financial worries. You're not going to have anything to worry about. I'll give you as much money as you need. So this is like Chabad Rabbi's dream. You're going on vacation somewhere, or you're traveling on business, or you're just plain traveling, and you meet some guy who says, I have a city full of Jews, and I want you to become the rabbi there, the Chabad rabbi, whatever, call yourself whatever you want, kind of rabbi, and I will provide for you. I'll give you all the money you need. All you have to do is teach Torah. So what does the guy say? The guy says, no, I don't want to go. What kind of story is this? What's happening here? Right? It's strange, very strange story. Especially from the Chabad perspective, especially from the perspective that we know it's not just Chabad. A Jew has an obligation to help another Jew, least of all if the guy wants to study Torah. I mean, come on. And you don't have no financial worries on top of that. So the Rebbe explains on many levels this Mishnah. Level number one is Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma says he met this guy who actually was a troublemaker. That's why it says, Hagabi Adamecha. I encountered a man, which on the Hebrew side, it doesn't say I encountered. It means this guy started up with me. That's basically what it says. And I didn't want to talk to him, But he said hello to me, because if not, he should have said hello first. The Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma should have said hello first. Why should he wait? Why is he waiting for the other guy to tell him hello? So basically, this guy was a troublemaker, and he. I'm sorry. One second, please. I'll be right back. I apologize. And we'll talk about mitzvah. So that's the Rebbe, one of the Rebbe's comments on this, that he basically was a troublemaker. So you have to know how to deal with a troublemaker. But on a deeper level, this guy, Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma, doesn't say he said no. It doesn't say he said, I'm not going to go to your place. He actually said, here are my terms. If you think that I'm going to be the rabbi and the one doing the mitzvahs and you're not going to come along with me, no, that's not going to happen. He says, if I'm going to go with you, your place is going to become a place of Torah. And if you're agreeing to that, then I'll go. So he says, I'm not going to live in a place where the rich man is going to pay me to be the rabbi sitting on the pedestal and they'll do whatever they want. That's not going to happen. You guys are going to have to study Torah. You're going to have to do mitzvahs. So that's this Mishnah. The difference between Torah and mitzvahs in Alter Rebbe explains to us in Tanya, and Chassidus talks about it at very great length, that Torah is considered to be Hashem's wisdom, Hashem's knowledge. Mitzvahs are Hashem's limbs, the limbs like the limbs of a person's body. What does this mean? Hashem has a plan for the world. And the plan for the world is that it should be a place that recognizes its creator, where people are acting in a way that they are acting such that they're the way their creator, the way Hashem wants them to act. And Hashem gave us mitzvahs in order to create spiritual channels coming into the world. So therefore, every time we do a mitzvah, we open up a channel of energy, and that channel of energy comes in. The study of Torah does not affect the physical world. In order to affect the physical world, you must do mitzvahs. So Torah adds energy to the pipeline that is above it. The pool of energy from there can come down through doing mitzvahs. So two separate things. Torah is a way of coming close to our creator, whereas mitzvahs are the way for bringing that energy actually into creation, into the world itself. Big difference.